Welcome to Breakdown. I'm Charles Ames. Today we'll talk with Swinton Wolfe, pen name of the author of a new Tacoma-based action-adventure book, The Dying Process, a Neil Ames PI mystery series. Available now in ebook. Next, in Both Sides Now, we'll have a debate about quote-unquote socialism. And then I'll finish with a discussion on a crisis that is increasingly affecting us all and threatens our descendants, climate change. That's all coming up now in Breakdown. Let's roll. This is Charles Ames with KTH FM. I'm talking with Swinton Wolfe, the author of The Dying Process, a Neil Ames mystery series. Swinton Wolfe studied anthropology and criminal justice while pursuing her BA in religion and theater. Her curiosity has led her to work as a social worker, radio news editor, in public affairs broadcasting, an actor, director, and artistic director of a Shakespearean theater company. She has written adaptations of Shakespeare plays and was a panelist on the topic Shakespeare Out of the Box at the Shakespeare Theatre Association Conference at Shakespeare's Globe in London, England. She is based in the San Juan Islands of Washington State.
And thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to talk with you, and maybe later on, maybe we'll have you do a reading of The Dying Process.
First of all,
before, in case people can't stick around, can you tell us where they might be able to find The Dying Process and Neil Ames mystery series?
Well, it's currently in ebook form, so you can get it off any website, service, distribution center of Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kovo. You're also able to get it through OverDrive at the library.
All right. And how soon will there be paperback editions?
The paperback editions are coming out on December the 16th.
All right, good news. So now, go ahead and maybe if you can, tell us the gist of the story behind The Dying Process.
Okay, well, it's all about murder, that murder sticks to you and won't let you go. And private investigator Neil Ames, he is a haunted man. The murder of his fiance 20 years ago still clings to him, and his PTSD flashbacks of his capture in Afghanistan are constant companions. And to fill his days, Neil immerses himself in sketching and drinking copious cups of coffee and the timeless wisdom of Sherlock Holmes. But his true calling lies in exposing corporate corruption and tracing dark secrets hidden within the labyrinth of government conspiracies and the murky depths of the dark web. So that's just the beginning. And he, an investigative reporter, Catherine Sterling, who is a woman from his past, is murdered, Neil's fragile equilibrium is shattered, and it reopens all of his old wounds. But it reluctantly agrees to consult on the case, decision that teams him up with Octavia Clark, and she is a beautiful, savvy, cane-wielding nightclub owner with a gift for extracting the truth from even the most reticent of suspects. But another murder takes place, and the two discover a link to a set of extraordinary handmade sneakers, and that propels them in from the back drop of the Pacific Northwest to Japan, where they stumble upon a sinister world of sneaker obsession and a global corporation's well-guarded secrets. And of course, as they inch closer to unraveling the chilling truth, danger lurks ever nearer, and Neil and Octavia find themselves on the crosshairs, and the line between the past and the present blurs and threatens to unravel their own pasts, and forcing Neil's quest for justice to become a quest for redemption. So there you go.
Super. Now, that's all and good. That's as it should. What makes this of interest to the Tacoma-based reader?
Well, the setting is inspired by my years in Tacoma. I was a longtime resident of Tacoma. I lived there 35 years. I was actively involved in the theater in the area, and also I worked at the Tacoma Art Museum. I was involved as a coordinator for the Hilltop Street Fair back when it originated back in like 2014, 2015, and did that for quite a few years. So most of my friends live in Tacoma, so I am a Tacoma girl, and I use the things that I heard, and I was also a morning news editor for a radio station at that time, and I know a lot of stories and secrets and background to Tacoma.
All right. With the couple minutes that we have left before we get into your reading, can you tell us, this is your first book. What inspired you? What possessed you to tell this story?
Well, I've written pieces and adaptations of Shakespeare's plays through my theater experience. And I've always done writing, but I was going through in a particularly bad period of time. Sometimes life just shuts down on you, and that's what happened to me. And I was feeling sorry for myself one day and wrote two paragraphs about a woman who heard something in the hallway of her apartment building. She walks out, she gets struck, she lands on the floor, and she dies on the floor. And the last thing she says is, "Please don't hurt my dog." And I carried those two paragraphs around in my phone for a couple of years. And then in November of 2019, I decided to start writing a story for NaNoWriMo. It was one way I could take control back in my life. I could control writing 50,000 words of a draft of a book. And that's where the dying process started. And I'm totally a pantser. I told the story to myself. I didn't do any planning or outlining or anything like that. Just told the story to myself and came out with 100,000 words that I had to revise down to the current 80,000 words.
All right, super. And this is apparently going to be a trilogy.
Yes, it is. This is only the first book. The second book, the four-bar progression, will be coming out in March. And then Shard of Perfection will be coming out next November.
All right, Christy, would object to giving us perhaps a reading from The Dying Process, a Neil Ames mystery series?
I would love to. Here you go. Neil poured half and half into his coffee, and as he took a sip, he caught Upton's eye. The crowd filtered into the conference room. Upton stayed behind and walked towards the coffee bar. "Neil, I'm glad you made it. Were you successful?" "It is a capital mistake to theorize before one has data. One begins to twist facts to suit theories instead of theories to suit facts." Upton shook his head. "Sherlock Holmes, right? A Scandal in Bohemia. Wait, are you telling me you found nothing? I need to shut them down. I need something." Neil pulled a flash drive from his coat pocket and placed it on the counter. "Fortunately, I found something. Discrepancies in the background documents. You're welcome." "You had me worried for a minute. What's on here?" Upton slipped the flash drive into his pocket. "They're using outdated methane values. There are breaches of procedure, insufficient community input, and little consultation with the tribe." Upton heaved a sigh, and his eyes lit up. "So they provided erroneous information to make the deal with the city?" "I suppose you could say that." Neil took a sip of coffee. "Somehow they managed to start construction months before getting all the permits." Neil's lips managed to start a hint of a smile. "I wonder how that happened. Who stands to gain from this arrangement?" "I have my suspicions, but I'll dig deeper to find the evidence." good, but there is a more critical reason I ask you to come here today, said Upton. I thought something was up. We don't usually transact business face to face. Upton cleared his throat. I need you to investigate a murder. No, Neil shook his head. I don't do murder investigations. His words were sharp and resolute. Why not? Upton asked. You were a military intelligence officer. You've seen things. And that's precisely why I chose not to. Neil sipped his coffee. I investigate corruption. It's analytical. There are no emotional bonds, and it pays well. Murder is visceral and viscous. Upton furrowed his brow. What do you mean? A murder haunts you. It sticks to you. It won't let you go. Upton rubbed his forehead. Have you heard of Catherine Sterling? Yes, Neil replied. She's a respected investigative journalist. Her body was found in a hallway at the Trotter Apartments a few hours ago. Adrenaline coursed through Neil's veins as his heart pounded and blood rushed in his ears. Anxiety began to take hold. The Trotter Apartments? Upton continued to present his case. He emphasized her expose's importance in his first-class action lawsuit win against the company she'd investigated. He put his hands in his trouser pockets and leaned forward. I liked Catherine, and I want to do right by her. I need your help. My expertise lies in prosecuting white-collar crime, not murder cases. Neil let out a strained breath. His eyes narrowed. It's impossible. And as I said before, my specialty is investigating financial crimes, not murders. Neil, please, begged Upton. I owe you big time. Neil stared out the lobby windows. Wind gusts forced the international flags to snap to quivering attention. He drew a deep cleansing breath and chucked his coffee cup into the blue recycle bin. So will you take this case? Damn it, Neil thought. I don't want to get involved, but I have to. I owe that much to her. All right, Neil said. I'll survey the crime scene and talk to people. You'll get my invoice in the morning. He headed towards the exit. As the door slid open, Upton called out, You'll be working with Detective Sergeant Wallace. What? You'll be working with Detective Sergeant John Wallace. Neil froze between the two doors as a blast of emotion surged through him at the mention of that name. The wind whipped through the open doors, blowing napkins off the coffee counter and swirling them around the lobby. Is that a problem? Asked Upton. No, said Neil as he passed through the doors.
That was a reading of The Dying Process by Swinton Wolfe, pen name of the author of The Dying Process, a Neil Ames mystery series. This is Charles Ames. I'm talking with my good friend, Dr. Phil Kiever, noted keynote speaker, hundreds of appearances. His recent reissue of 182 Days in Iraq is available. And we're talking today about the topic of quote unquote socialism. How you doing, Phil?
Very well, Charles. Thank you.
What I'd like to do, I guess, is jump in and talk about how, golly gee swell, socialism seems to be great for the rest of the world. What's America's problem?
Hold on. Where is socialism great? Where is socialism great in the rest of the world? Venezuela or Cuba? I'm confused. Where is it great?
Okay, because you know that that there's America and then there is everything else. I'm talking about everything else. They have minimum wage that is livable. They don't have to have multiple jobs. They've got, in many cases, free college. They've got free health care. That's just scratching the surface. Why can't we as Americans, the greatest country in the world in history, have the same thing?
you and I, as veterans, happy previous Veterans Day to you and I and everyone else. We have free healthcare and we had free college, and that wasn't socialism. Wasn't just handed to us. I would say that we did well. I am holding in my never before or ever to be nicotine stained fingers a copy of Karl Marx's Das Kapital. That is Kapital, for those of you from Rio Linda, translation from German to English. Karl Marx was not a politician. Karl Marx was an economist. Most of his writings are written in mathematical equations that just talks about a labor hour and profit and capital and cost and all of the fun things that go into making an economic equation. So in theory, on a whiteboard, in a chalkboard, and even in this book in my hand, socialism, which was hijacked from Karl Marx and propagated by countless generations of folks that didn't embrace democracy or a Republican form of government, Republican capital R, not little r for Republican or Democrat, but Republican forms of government. He didn't give a care about politics. He was just talking about what you could get for your working hour. And that dovetails right into what you talked about. What is a living, or what is a livable minimum wage? What is the minimum that one has to make in order to be comfortable, right? And there have been numerous surveys that the more money you make, the actual, you know, more misery that you encounter. And because we are a very heterogeneous society here in America, from, you know, Hawaii to Puerto Rico and American Samoa and everywhere in between, what a minimum livable wage is here in North Carolina is different what a livable minimum wage is in California. So how would you, as the proponent today of socialism, account for those differences?
Let's make sure that we're talking about the same thing. Your communist screed, Das Kapital, you know, you might have a little more grounding in it than I do. Is that the same socialism, as I said, that the rest of the world is enjoying? Are we talking about two different things?
It is, yes, a very good question. It is the same hijacked form of socialism. Again, it's very easy to follow along. Karl Marx is a mathematician, was a mathematician, was an economist. Never in any of his writings does he say that this should be put into a political persuasion or any sort of form of government. He was really speaking and addressing the common working man who you are concerned about and I am concerned about. You know, we can agree on that. You know, everyone should have a roof over their head and food and gas and be able to raise their family up. So yes, we are talking about the same form of socialism / communism that, as you say, is used in the rest of the world to give free healthcare and, you know, free college and four days a week. And if you're, you know, living in Paris, you could put, you know, a loaf of bread under your armpit and not go to work for the last 3 days of the week. So yes, we are talking about the same thing. But where it gets hijacked and where it was hijacked is the secession from, okay, Karl Marx is dead and now the next person picked up his mantle and you know, completely ran askew with it. Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, whom I have met, is a true believer. He drinks his Kool-Aid, him and his wife vacation in the former Soviet Union for their honeymoon. He is a true believer. But I doubt very seriously that if you threw up one of these equations on a whiteboard in front of him and said, what does this mean, Senator Sanders, or where did I find this, that he would know, right? Because Karl Marx was just talking about what you talked about at the beginning, a livable wage. How does the math make sense? And again, my question that I will repeat to you a little more slowly is, how would you account for a livable wage between the Florida Keys and Pierce County, Washington? You know, the cost of living is different. So what would be your solution?
Let's specify the Florida Keys. I can't imagine is that much different being a tourist trap. Let's perhaps compare North Carolina, if you will, to Pierce County, where we're at, because I'm sure the minimum wage there is probably half of what it's starting to be here in Western Washington. Let's take that as a group.
Okay. Then, yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great place to start. So I am in North Carolina. I don't work for minimum wage, but I believe that most of the advertisements that I see for starting wages you know, at places all around the community, is around $12, $12 to $16 an hour, depending on how badly they need people. I live on a nice 15-acre spread. Okay, minimum wage in North Carolina. I'm gonna have to look it up real quick because I don't work for minimum wage. So
okay, then we'll go
just
with 12.
Going with the cost of living. Okay, yeah, we'll say $12 because that's about what people start with. I have a nice spread here. You know, I got a bunch of animals, 15 acres, 3,000 square foot home. My mortgage, property taxes included, is $1,250 a month is my mortgage for a great place. What would $1,250 buy me for a house in Pierce County?
You're the Mr. Moneybags. You know more about mortgages and property values than I do. You would have to tell me. I am a renter, therefore
okay,
I am
a socialist. Charles, what is rent? Charles, what is rent? What is rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Pierce County? Where do you live?
God, probably $1,200.
Okay, so I am owning a place for about the same as what it costs to rent a place in Pierce County. So, of course, the minimum wage in Washington State would have to be higher than what the minimum wage is in North Carolina. And I'm okay with that because that's market-driven. That's market-driven. You're not talking about socialism. The market drives it.
Let's talk about services in North Carolina versus Pierce County. And at some point, I'm going to want to ask you about taker states. But first, Dr. Kiever.
Gasoline today in North Carolina was $3.09, but it's been, you know, $2.99, you know, $3.14. And having been in Washington State just 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, I know in my rental Scooby van from Spokane International Airport, I was paying close to $4.50, $5 a gallon in Spokane.
Yeah, and here, what is it in Pierce or King County? It's, let's call it a little over four, but maybe for the sake of argument and conglomerate, let's go with a little over four, four and a half. So the question here,
okay.
And what are
okay,
the roads
good.
Like?
So we have established that there's differences. We've established that there's differences in the cost of living. So therefore, of course, there's going to be differences in what people need to be paid. But that should be market driven between the boss and the employee. If the boss wants the employee to be able to put gas in his vehicle and come to work in Tacoma, he's going to have to pay them more than he would have to pay them to fill up their tank in Gates County, North Carolina, and drive to work. And that's okay. That's market driven. It doesn't have to be socialism. It doesn't have to be one size fits all.
You're assuming that the Vox Populi has as much control as an employer does, and that typically is not the case.
Why would an owner-operator or an employer not have a great deal of control, if not complete control, over what they pay their employees?
Because the employer typically, for where you're at, the need, it's an employer's market. Here, it's a worker's market. Bill, we're almost out of time. I'll let you have the last word.
Okay. Okay. I am all for, and I think you and I found a lot of common ground here. I just think you might be using the wrong terms. Wages, salaries, benefits, all across the greatest country here in the world need to be and continue to be market driven. And people will get rewarded for, you know, their sweat equity. And sweat equity can be written in a mathematical equation right from Karl Marx.
Dr. Phil Kiever, doctorate of strategic studies out of Liberty University, noted keynote speaker as well, and also has recently reissued 182 Days in Iraq. Phil, you know, man, I love you.
I still hate you, but that was fun.
It is, man. Yeah, I miss you. All right. Thank you, Phil.
Bye.
Listen.
Climate change is impossible to deny, but debating it is as simple as 2, 4, 6, 8. Global temperatures have risen by an average of 2 degrees Fahrenheit. That cannot be denied. Carbon has just reached 400 parts per million for the first time. That cannot be denied. The atmosphere has 6% more moisture in the last 30 years. That cannot be denied. 8 Pacific islands have disappeared off the map. That cannot be denied. The hottest year on record has been broken 8 times consecutively, but there is, quote, no evidence of climate change. Oil companies predicted climate change 50 years ago, but there is no evidence of climate change. A dozen Florida home insurers have left the state, but there is no evidence of climate change. The Pope says climate change is a threat to mankind, but there is no evidence of climate change. The Pentagon says climate change is a national security threat, but there is no evidence of climate change. Lake Mead outside Las Vegas is 175 feet below normal. 100 more feet and they will have to turn off Hoover Dam. But there is no evidence of climate change. Maybe I'm just in the pocket of big survival. People denied Galileo, Copernicus, Darwin. Are you saying this climate change is not man-made? Natural changes occur over thousands of years, not like the last 20. Temps usually change by 1 degree centigrade every 1,000 to 5,000 years. But temps have already jumped 1 degree centigrade in the last 30 years. But hey, we don't need coral reefs. We don't need polar bears, bees, winters. Wait a second. Ask any family farmer that has been in the biz for generations. They will tell you something is very wrong with the weather. Warm weather is forcing Iditarod sled dog races farther north. Miami streets are flooding. The island nation of Kiribati, population 100,000, is disappearing. Meanwhile, Charles Koch still has to fund deniers. We stopped acid rain, and the ozone hole, and air pollution, smallpox, and smoking. Are you a passenger on this planet, or crew? If you aren't trying to fix this, well then guess what? You are contributing to it. You know, right now you can take a boat to the North Pole. And soon, millionaires can look at their mansions through glass-bottom boats. Now tell me where I'm wrong.